Hasta la vista, movies.
It's B Movies, thanks to Metze Bar, your source for all things NZIFF, thanks to the best place to go before or after.
Definitely. Go check out Metze Bar. Total legends for getting behind B Movies this year. B Movies, of course, is where we dive into the New Zealand International Film Festival program. We will have some reviews a bit later in the show, but first and foremost, I spoke with Jonathan Ogilvie last week. He's Christchurch-born director, and he's returned home for an evocative coming-of-age story called Head South, which is a drama set in Christchurch in the late 70s as post-punk arrives on the shores of Aotearoa. Stars Ed Oxenbold and Stella Bennett, who you might know as Benny. It's on in Auckland at the Civic, Sunday the 11th of August, and at the ASB Waterfront Theatre, Thursday the 15th of August. Here's my chat with Jonathan Ogilvie.
What inspired you to create Head South?
Well, it's all very much autobiographical, based on my time in living in Christchurch. And, you know, it feels like it's an important time for New Zealand. It's actually something that we should actually take some pride in terms of the music output, particularly then. Because it's, when you think about it, it's almost, the film's kind of like a quasi-origin story for Flying Nun, because it's sort of sets up, it's a couple of years before Flying Nun, but it sets up that world which Roger was part of and which he established Flying Nun and went from there. And, you know, the fact is Flying Nun's the only internationally recognised record label, really, in Australia and New Zealand. You know, it's this side of the world, it made a big impact. And a lot of the origin of that is interesting, I think, because all this great creative energy that came around when that new-sounding music, and for me, post-punk was always much more interesting than punk music, because they used to talk about punk, you know, three chords, can't play their instruments, which was actually rubbish. All the punk I heard, or the way I heard it, was just pub rock played fast, most of it. It was still playing blues riffs, still doing the same thing, whereas post-punk was actually a breakthrough, because people were genuinely picking up instruments that they hadn't played before and playing them for the first time, and sort of going, well, what happens if I play this? Or what happens if I play that? They hadn't been to guitar school to learn how to play blues chords, as I say. So it just opened the window for this really exciting world of music, not just music, but ideas. And the other thing that fascinates me about post-punk is that it was very inclusive. It's like a lot of very strong women came through that whole scene. You know, obviously, Patti Smith, Deborah Harry, and then, you know, later, of course, in the same vein, you have your PJ Harveys, etc. So Kim Gordon is another one, of course. And it was much more inclusive than, you know, and much less machismo than prog rock, well, even punk rock, actually. But yacht rock, you know, all that sort of guitar-centric music was not there in post-punk. It was actually doing something much more interesting. We actually featured the Slits, as you know, a great all-female band that came out of that time, which was certainly a band that I pricked my ears up to.
Has Shane Carter had a hand in some of the music which has appeared on the film?
Yes, he's the composer of the film, and he. So we got together. I know him from years back, because I shot one of his, I think maybe the second clip for Straitjacket Fits, She Speeds. Shot that many years ago with Shane, so I've known him for many years, and I approached him. It felt like a really good fit, Shane being primarily a guitarist, musician with a bassist and guitar. So we talked about this idea of distorted, treated guitars. And so the whole soundtrack is formulated from his guitar and his guitar pedals.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Some of your very, very early work has been making music videos for Flying Nun. How did that experience contribute to the creation of this film, Head South?
Well, it's interesting. If you look at She Speeds, you'll see a couple of edits, because back in the day, of course, we were shooting 16mm reversal, and that would get transferred in a Telecine, and it would be a tape edit of the reversal film. So not even a negative, the actual film, the actual reversal, the actual film. So there was no negative to fall back on. So very, very likely to get scratched while you're editing it on a Steenbeck. And some of those edits, the splices, I could never get out when I edited it. So there's a couple in She Speeds where you can actually see the line that just occurs in about three quarters of the way up the frame. And I really dig that. So we actually put those in post-production into Head South, this idea of almost an abstract expression approach to film, in the fact that the actual quality of the film comes through. So there's lots of archive bits of problems with it, if you like. There's scratches and of course these edits, and that was all part of the fabric of it.
Nice. Now, how does Head South differ from your previous work, and are there any new storytelling techniques that you've explored in this film?
Well, I think the main one is that everybody and anyone who's ever done a creative writing course will be told, write about what you know.
Yes.
And I always teach my screenwriting students, it's like, write about what you know, but expand on it. Make it bigger, because the screen actually demands bigger stories than the page, I would argue. So, you know, my idea was like, yes, write about what you know, write about what it was like, what happened to you when you were 10 years old, but set it on the moon. You know, use genre to make a bigger story. I kind of ignored my advice for about the last 35 years and finally came back to writing about what I know. Not that it's necessarily bigger than the true experience, to be honest. It's very much what you see happened, and most of it happened to me. But I had kind of ignored it, and it took me a while to come around to it, because one of the key relationships in the film is between Ed, who plays Ed Oxenbold, who plays Angus, who's the main character. But the key relationship is with his father, and I'm writing it about myself. If I'd written it any earlier, it would have been all from the point of view of this 17-year-old boy.
Yes.
But now I'm writing it, you know, as an older man, I'm writing it, I'm actually older than the dad.
Yes.
So you start to see it from both sides, which becomes an interesting conversation between the two of them.
Yes. Excellent. Excellent. There's a nice little quote in the NZIFF program from Roger Shepherd, who says, the characters are spot on and it oozes the weirdness of Christchurch, I remember. Which is great. Now, people have a couple of chances to see the film in Tāmaki, Auckland. It's at the Civic on Sunday, the 11th of August at 6:30 p.m. and at the ASB Waterfront Theatre on Thursday, the 15th of August. Are you gonna be present and chatting about the film?
I'm certainly going to be introducing the film. We'll have lots of our cast there. And we'll be doing a Q&A afterwards on the Civic.
You've been listening to B-Movies, thanks to Metze Bar.